This is the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. This is show 199. If we make it one more episode, we're syndicated. That's not really a thing. That's for television. But then you could see reruns of the show on cable TV somewhere. But no, that's not really true. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, USA Today's NFL Wire site, with my co-host, Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com. And this show, 199, we are here to give our final preseason thoughts and our roster predictions as the Cardinals will close the preseason on Thursday. This edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast is brought to you by Harrys.com. I've talked about it for months now. Make the switch with me. Go to Harrys.com/Sea Red and get yourself the trial pack for free, where you get the high-quality razor, the handle, the foaming shave gel, and you get to try it out for free. High quality razors, low cost. You will love it the way I do. And it's, again, that's Harrys.com/Sea Red. They bring us this episode, this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Seth, what is there to think about? We've got one preseason game left. And to me, it feels like we still, just how it happens in the preseason, do we still know what the Cardinals are going to be this year?
I think this is the first year that there's been no, knock on wood, you know, huge injury. There's been no huge loss. And I still feel like the Cardinals got screwed. I mean, you look at the teams they played. They couldn't have asked for a better threesome to start the preseason. You get Phillip Rivers, Keenan Allen, Melvin Gordon, and then on defense you get Joey Bosa, Melvin Ingram, you know, an attacking San Diego or Los Angeles Chargers defense. Game two, you get Drew Brees and that vaunted Saints offense with their incredibly improved defense. And then in game three, you get the Dallas Cowboys rushing attack with their, you know, improved pass rush and secondary under, you know, Rod Marinelli and Chris Richard, you know, who Cardinals fans are more than familiar with. And in the end, the Cardinals basically get none of that. I mean, we didn't see Rivers or Keenan Allen or Joey Bosa. Obviously, there was no Drew Brees. There's no Alvin Kamara. And then in the third preseason game, which is supposed to be the dry run, right? That's the word that's always used. This is the closest thing to the regular season you're going to get. The Cardinals saw three starters on offense for the Dallas Cowboys. Cowboys electing, you know, obviously the horrific health news for Travis Frederick. Hopefully he gets that figured out soon. But then you look at, you know, Zach Martin's dealing with a knee issue. Tyron Smith has a back issue. So they said, you know what? We need Lyle Collins to get some work. But other than that, we're good. You know, they put Cole Beasley out there, and you and I talked about it before the show, and neither of us could identify who the starting tight end for the Dallas Cowboys is going to be now that Jason Witten is in the ESPN booth. But, you know, those were the three starters on that Cowboys offense. No Dak Prescott, no Zeke Elliott, no offensive line supposed to be the best in the NFL. And the Cardinals, they did exactly what we wanted them to do in the preseason, right? When we previewed the preseason, we said we wanted to see an aggressive, attacking, shutdown type of defense. We saw that. We just didn't see it against any good offenses. And so now you're like, I think you're to the point where you're like, I'm really excited because what they've done is really good, but I also don't know if they're any good because they haven't, you know, the Cardinals' first team offense has done a hell of a job in shutting down second and third team, or first team defense, excuse me, has done a hell of a job shutting down, you know, second and third team offenses of the opposition, but they haven't really done anything against first team offenses, and that's nothing they can control.
Yeah. And so we're going to talk about on the show tonight, recording on a Tuesday. You'll hear this if you catch the episode before the fourth preseason game. You'll get our thoughts on what we're not really going to talk about the game on Thursday, because we know that basically no one's going to play. We're talking a little bit of the roster battles and bubble players, but we're going to talk about the offensive takeaways from their win over the Cowboys on Sunday. We're going to go with the defensive takeaways. We're going to talk about the players that helped themselves, the players who didn't. We'll get into some of the final roster battles and bubble players for Thursday, and then we'll wrap up the show with each of us giving our predictions for the 53-man roster, which, kind of like mock drafts, it's almost an act of futility, because there's always information that we're missing, and there will always be injuries that change things up. So let's go ahead and get started with the offensive takeaways. So Sam Bradford plays very little and isn't helped at all. The first takeaway for me was, what happened to the fact that Sam Bradford looked so sharp, suddenly got no help? And it was like last year, he got sacked once, and then J.J. Nelson was J.J. Nelson, dropped a pass. Ricky Seals-Jones doesn't haul in a pass. And while there was some good defense, when you have someone like Sam Bradford to get you the ball right on the money, you got to come down with it. And it just sort of emphasized, oh, we could see this happening again, where we're going to be Larry Fitzgerald, David Johnson, and then, well, maybe someone will catch the ball.
Is prayer an option for the third offensive weapon? You know, and that, I think that was probably the most disappointing part of it, was that a guy like Christian Kirk, a guy like Chad Williams, a guy like Bryce Butler, a guy like Greg Little, you know, J.J. Nelson, they all had an opportunity. And I'm going to give Ricky Seals-Jones the benefit of the doubt. I believe that was his first or second target of the preseason. And that was just a nice play. He ended up injuring Kayvon Webster on the play by landing on his shoulder. You know, it's just one of those situations where you look at the offense, and the question from, I mean, we can say July, but we know it's actually from February. The question has been who outside of Larry Fitzgerald and David Johnson is going to do anything offensive? And I don't think through all of training camp, all of preseason, there's no answer. And so that, like you said, that's disappointing, because the type of quarterback Bradford is, he's going to give you a chance to make plays. He's not going to make the plays for you. He's not that type of quarterback, but he's going to give good players an opportunity to make plays. Now the question becomes, are there good players on the Cardinals roster? Quite frankly, we just don't know. And you don't want to give up on Chad Williams, and this is nothing, there's no indictment of Christian Kirk or his, you know, potential career outlook. But for the 2018 season, I don't know if you have anybody on this roster that you go, okay, that's our second wide receiver. That's our third offensive option. And that's disappointing. And in the same breath, I think, and you can even make the argument that even more disappointing in this game was the fact that the first team offensive line came out and just got punched in the mouth for the second game in a row. I mean, just absolutely stunned at the jump. And I know David Johnson wasn't in there. I know it was Chase Edmonds, but Chase Edmonds averaged 5 yards a carry on the day. So it's not like they were, you know, blocking for Kerwin Williams again. And that's no offense to Kerwin, but they're blocking for a guy that can create a little bit. And obviously they were giving up a sack of Sam Bradford, which I thought was actually good to see. I mean,
because you don't like the result of there being a sack, but Carson Palmer always said it as well. He wanted to get knocked down a couple of times at the beginning of the preseason just to get his body used to football again, because guess what? Quarterbacks in practice don't get touched.
Right. So, I mean, I think that was big for everybody. I mean, obviously we all held our breath, but then you go, okay, he's standing up again. That's good.
He's not made of glass, even though everyone says that.
And so I think there was some concern. I think there still is concern with the pass protection on this offensive line, and it showed. I mean, DJ Humphreys got his lunch stolen basically by Randy Gregory, who hasn't played football in 2 years. And now, that being said, if you go back to that 15 draft, and Jess can attest to this, I didn't think there was a better option as a pass rusher than Randy Gregory in that draft class. I mean, I thought he was the guy. I thought he was phenomenal. And he's got a lot of off-field and personal issues. But it's still a bit disheartening to see DJ Humphreys, who is in the same, you know, same draft class as Gregory, and struggling with guys with athleticism and quickness coming off the edge, because Randy Gregory might be one of the lesser pass rushers that DJ Humphreys has to see in the 2018 NFL season. And so for him to get worked in, I think there was, what, 3 plays, he gave up a sack and then 2 quarterback hits. That was a little problem. And then you and I both talked about it. Andre Smith, I mean, you and I joked about this before, but he basically is Levi Brown.
But at least he's playing right tackle and not left tackle. The way that the offensive line was built this offseason, it was built to be a mauling running team. And when you don't have David Johnson back there and you're not doing a lot of offensive scheming, that's kind of the result you're going to get. I was disappointed, obviously, that Chad Williams and Christian Kirk weren't able to stack games, like they like to say. They looked so good against the Saints. And just nothing in the passing game seemed to click at, like, across the board. This went the first team. This went with Mike Glennon, who was, you know, what did he have? Like 62 yards and, or no, he'd had like 37 yards and 8 completions. Yeah. there was nothing happening in the passing game. And part of that were drops. I mean, that's was an issue again. You didn't have Larry Fitzgerald playing. You didn't have David Johnson playing. And let's be honest, the fact that Jermaine Gresham's not playing is also a thing, because as much as people want to say that Ricky Seals-Jones is going to have a breakout year, guess who's still the best tight end on this roster? It's Jermaine Gresham. And we don't know how well he's going to run, but Jermaine Gresham has been a 50-60 catch guy before when he was utilized in the passing game consistently in Cincinnati. He could be that guy again. So essentially, they were playing the Cardinals starter, the Cardinals offense. It was a starting offensive line. It was a starting quarterback. And then after that, it was, we don't know who is still, because no David Johnson, no Larry Fitzgerald, no Jeremy Gresham. And so you've got a bunch of backups or number two, number three, number four options after that. Nonetheless, it turned out to me that one of the takeaways you were talking about, who's going to be that third offensive option, third offensive weapon. We might have learned that it's going to be two guys that will barely see the field in Chase Edmonds and TJ Logan. They're backup running backs. Edmonds looks good. I mean, that's the sad thing. So you've got Larry Fitzgerald, you got David Johnson, and their third and their fourth best offensive options are going to be guys that play 5 to 15 snaps a game, or might play 20 snaps a game between the two of them.
Yeah, and that's where they're at right now. And you know, we talked about this in the off season, and we've discussed this quite a bit. And the idea of a rebuild has been kind of not talked about, but you know, we've used the word transition quite a bit to describe this off season. But when you go back to it, in the end, Rome wasn't built in a day, and good football teams aren't built in a year. And when you go back to Bruce Arians' first season, you tell yourself, yeah, they won 10 games, but there were obvious flaws from Jump Street.
Do you remember the calls for Drew Stanton after seven games?
Yeah, I mean, Palmer was average, and the offensive line was awful. We didn't realize how bad the next guy behind Levi Brown was until he tore his triceps, and it's like, my God, how is there somebody worse than Levi Brown? And so, you know, you get to all of that, and yeah, they won 10 games, but it meant nothing in the scheme of the season because they didn't make the playoffs. It was a great jumping off point, but it meant nothing. And then now you look at this season, and you can convince me in a number of different ways that this team can win 8 or 9 games. But you also can convince me, because of the obvious flaws of this team, that they could be a 6-win team, because they may not have the offensive firepower at this juncture to hold up. And that's okay. It's frustrating, but it's okay.
Yeah. And that's what I get out of this offensively, is that we were left wanting for so much more because they held David Ed Johnson out, they held Larry Fitzgerald out. So we really haven't gotten a taste of what the offense is going to be. We had moments against the Chargers with the David Johnson. We had moments against New Orleans when they opened up the passing game.
Well, and that's what I was going to say. Even think about that. I mean, Mike McCoy's basically bubble wrapped Sam Bradford this entire preseason, right? Like, all right, you know, he gave him a series, like a single series in the Saints game, and that was basically it. Like, the rest of the time, it's been, all right, Sam, show us that the knees work enough to turn around and hand off to David or Chase, or, you know, show us that you can, you know, the arm's good enough to throw a 5-yard out to Larry, or a 6-yard seam route to Ricky Seal. Like, he hasn't done anything. And it's by design. It's not like this is going to be the offense. I mean, this is going to be part of the offense, don't get me wrong, but they're still going to throw the ball around. They're still going to push the ball down the field a little bit. It's going to be in specific times, not third play, fourth play of the game type stuff. And so, you know, they've basically babied him into this point and said, you know, we're okay not knowing what we have with Sam Bradford, because we know what we have with Sam Bradford.
And coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, we'll talk about the defensive takeaways. So we'll come back on the best era Cardinals talk, and we'll talk defense and the takeaways there. That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. Now, before we come to the next part of the show, I wanted to let you know about a new friend we have on the show called Lightstream.com. If you're like a lot of other people, you've probably looked at your credit card bill and been shocked at the interest rate. In fact, the average credit card interest rate is more than 18%, when the truth is you could actually roll your credit card debt into one monthly payment at a lower fixed rate. And that's where Lightstream comes in. Part of SunTrust, a national bank and loan lender, they offer loans between $5,000 and $100,000 with rates as low as 5.89% with auto pay. So less than 6%, that says you can get as low as that. And you can get the funds the same day you apply. There's absolutely no fees, which in credit, and you're rewarded for having good credit. And so now, I've been to the site. It's super easy to apply. You can do it in minutes. There's even an app for your phone. There's nothing hidden. The rates you can get are all up front. There's nothing sketchy about it. And the best part are the rates. Now, if you want to save yourself a ton of money and interest in, and make paying your bills easier, we have a special deal for you guys who listen to the show. Our listeners will get a special discount on top of Lightstream's already low rates. But the only way to get that discount is if you go to lightstream.com/CRED. Again, that's lightstream.com/CRED. LIGHTSTREAM.com/CRED. Subject to credit approval, rates include a 0.5% auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply, and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/CRED for more information. We're back on the Rise Up CRED podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Time to talk about defensive takeaways. And my goodness, once again, the Cardinals taking the ball away at incredible rates. We thought they were doing great with 4 takeaways in each of the first 2 games. And then they matched that with 8 takeaways against the Cowboys. Now, obviously, a couple of those were special teams gaffes that basically Dallas gave away. But there was a lot to like when it comes to... We were talking about how this isn't saying, is it not sustainable? Are the Cardinals going to be able to cause turnovers at not necessarily this rate, but at a rate of a couple of times a game that they're going to be doing this?
I think they will. And one of the things that's sustainable is that, and you and I have talked about this, the strength of this team is in the secondary. And when you look at, I mean, Jamar Taylor got absolutely roasted on a single play. But if you go back to that play and look, the reason the throw was missed is not only because it was Cooper Rush throwing the ball, but when you look at the play itself, there's a hand right in Rush's face as he's trying to step into his throw. And that is something that the Wilkes-Holcomb defense wants. It wants to put pressure on the quarterback, but it also puts pressure on the defenders. And I don't know if you saw this, but Jamar's wife actually sent me a message on Twitter and said he knows it's preseason. He was trying to make a play. And so saying, like, he jumped the route, which I got. Like, I get that. And that is the style of play. That is what Steve Wilks and Al Holcomb want from this defense. So when you look at it, 100%, it's going to go down. I mean, there's 0% chance that they are as incredibly active as they have been. However, they're still going to put up obscene numbers because of the way the defense is designed. Now, if the defense is bad, obviously that kind of goes out the window, right? But we're assuming that this defense is going to be a good defense that plays at a high level. And so far through the preseason, again, you can only play the team that's in front of you. It's not the Arizona Cardinals' fault, but they've done that so far in the preseason.
For me, what stands out to me is remember the talk of how Patrick Peterson might not fit Steve Wilks' defensive scheme, and maybe. And I understand what James Betcher did. It makes sense. You've got the best cover guy in the league. Well, just erase him. Erase that defender, and they're taken care of. Now, that gets a little bit boring, but Patrick Peterson is absolutely loving what he's doing now. He's being challenged to do more. He's not just playing with his back to the quarterback. He's not just staring at the receiver, shutting him down. Now he gets to play with his eyes, apparently. And if what we saw on Sunday is any preview to what the season is, this is going to be probably Patrick's finest year. And then the other one that stood out to me is the fact, remember Buda Baker and his inability to catch passes, and, you know, inability to make plays, his lack of ball skills. If he can, I mean, granted, that wasn't like it was a difficult interception, but guess what? That was a Tyrann Mathieu play. That was a Tyrann Mathieu play from a guy who is stronger, faster, and bigger than Tyrann Mathieu, who's playing Tyrann Matthew's position. That's going to be exciting. If Buda can be what we wanted Tyrann to be, he won't be the playmaker. He doesn't have the same elite ball skills and movement skills that Tyrann has. But those two players showed what Cardinals fans should be excited about defensively.
They should be. And you know, one of the things that I've liked about this idea of this defense from the beginning is that it simplifies what a guy like Deion Buchanan has to do. And when you look at Buchanan's first game back, you saw that he's playing free. He's not playing under the cumbersome, okay, if this guy does this, I got to do this. But if this guy does, no, he goes, okay, this is my read this time. I have to do this. And he knows his job, and he did it extremely well in the first game. Now, again, it was a game. We're not going to say, hey, he's back. He's, you know, he's going to be a borderline Pro Bowl type player like he was before. But I think what you saw in a single game from Deion gives you more hope than what you saw the last 2 years, the final 2 years of the Bruce Arians era with Deion, because that was leading to a question of, should they really bring him back on this rookie, you know, this fifth year rookie deal? Like, is he worth bringing back? And so far, obviously, it's a single preseason game, but it was a whole first half. I think the answer is unequivocally yes, and that he's played extremely well in doing it.
Now, if he plays, if he stays healthy, if he is right, and we saw what he did in 2015, he put up numbers across the stat sheet that was only matched by Thomas Davis, and he's kind of playing the Thomas Davis position for the Cardinals now. So he was super active. So he's making tackles. He is getting to the quarterback. He is also making plays at or behind the line of scrimmage. That's how you know that Buchanan's being great. He's not just making tackles, because our linebackers are going to make tackles. That's just how it's designed. He will get volume tackles. Question is the quality of tackles. Are they 3 or 4 yards past the line of scrimmage, or are they at and behind the line of scrimmage in it? And it looked like he was incredibly active again. Now, another thing that you look at, and we'll kind of talk about that more on the individuals, but, you know, if Chandler Jones gets any help at all on that other side of the defensive line, watch out, because that's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, and when you look at this defensive line as a whole, I think it rests on a couple players. I think the first one's obviously a guy that didn't play this last week, and that's Robert Kimdiche. You need to see Kimdiche be elite. And I know that's silly to say, but you need to see him create havoc from the interior, because in the Wilkes Holcomb defense, that is a huge, huge thing that has to happen for this team to be successful. And if it doesn't happen, well, then it's really easy to just block the one guy that's going to create a problem, and that's obviously Chandler Jones. And so the question becomes, what do you get from this defensive line? And so far, I think your top, I would say 6 to 7 of your top defensive linemen have shown a very nice ability to create consistent pressure up front and really kind of put the Cardinals in a comfortable position where you're going, huh, this could be a really, really nice team right here.
And obviously there were some things to look at on the back end of the roster, but it's hard to look at the back end of the roster and take it too seriously since most of these guys aren't going to be on the team. But, you know, defensively, it's just they give you a little taste. And so there's still concerns. There's still concerns because they did better on third down. They stopped the run much better. But the one time they were facing a good offensive line and good running back was against New Orleans, and that didn't go well. Now, Steve Wilks has said, and both Holcomb and Wilks have both said, that that was more a case of assignment and trust. They weren't gap disciplined, and which is going to be critical for this year. And if that can happen, you know, we might see if there's anything historic we can look at. It means that the first half of the year, there'll be a few breakdowns, but that this team can be dominant, can be absolutely dominant defensively in the second half of the season. So the defense is the talent. Can the offense do enough? Because if we recall, the defensive numbers that the Cardinals had statistically were great, except for points allowed, and which made us believe is that defense really good. But when I ran across some defensive metrics, it was, aside from points, almost every single defensive metric, Cardinals were in the top 10. That's third down. That's yards per play. That's, you know, yards per drive. That's plays per drive. And the only thing you can explain is just simply the fact that the offense was so poor that the defense was in a position where between special teams and offense, that the defense was put in a position where the team was going to score anyway. Now, there were obviously mistakes. And so this year, how much simpler is it going to be? Is it really? Because the Cardinals have talked up this defense, and you and I have talked about off the air, is no one's talking about James Betcher. As no one here, you know, in this organization is talking about how, you know, a defensive coordinator who led a top 10 defense three straight years, no one's missing him. And maybe that's just part of the propaganda that you have to do, the message you have to send when you change coaching staffs. But these players look legitimately excited about the defense they're playing now.
Well, and they seem like they bought in. When you listen to Patrick Peterson, when you listen to Chandler Jones, when you listen to these guys talk about the defense, it sounds like you said, like they're excited, like they've bought in to what they're being sold. And that's a huge deal, especially for guys that are, you know, coming back to a defense that, as you just said, has been extremely successful, you know, in their career here. You know, Peterson's been on top seven, you know, DVOA defenses the last 5 years or 4 years, whatever it is. And you know, you look at Chandler Jones, you know, he's been to a Super Bowl. He's a guy that is put up ridiculous numbers throughout his career. And so when you look at all of it together, you wonder, you know, okay, are they going to buy in? And they're buying in to the point where you're going, they seem like they like this better than what they were doing, right? And so when you look at it from that perspective, you as a fan become more comfortable because you see genuine excitement about the team and the defense that they're going to be playing. And I mean, that was a concern when the move was happening, is that, you know, your strength of this team has been your defense. I mean, the offense was good, don't get me wrong, but the strength of the team has been this defense. And now all of a sudden you're bringing in a new coach, you know, a new system and a new scheme, and you're asking successful players, all pro players to change. I mean, that's unheard of. And they're and just flat out they're buying in wholesale.
And with that, we'll move on to the next segment of the Rise of the Sea Red podcast. So coming up next on the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web, we're going to talk about the individual players. Who are the players that help themselves? Which players kind of set themselves back a little bit? That's coming up next on Rise of Sea Red. We're back on the Rise of Sea Red podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. And we'll talk about the players. Which players helped themselves with the performance on Sunday? Which players did not do so? I think for me, I think the most obvious one, I think that the player that stood out the most that helped his case for the roster has to be Vontarius Dora, a guy who was, you know, a practice squad guy a year ago. And at the beginning of training camp was running with the ones, has since been kind of passed up of Benson Mayo, which is everyone expected Mayo to be the starter, but he has been, I mean, Pro Football Focus numbers show it. He had 3 sacks on Sunday. And I think he locked himself in for a spot on the roster. That's gonna disappoint as we get to the roster. If we go to the roster predictions, that's gonna disappoint the Cappy fans. Because I don't think both of them will make the roster. But Carson and Chris Collinsworth, they're the same guy. Every time he talked about Vontarius Dora on the broadcast, he was referring to the stories of Cappy. So yeah, maybe they are the same guy with different numbers.
Exactly. You know, and obviously Dora was one of the first ones. Buchanan was a big one for me. I talked about him a little bit earlier. He was a lock for the roster, but you didn't know what you were getting from him, right? And all of a sudden he comes out with his hair on fire, playing at a breakneck type of pace, and that was great to see. And then I think the other guy that I would say on the defense side, and there were so many like good instances on the defensive side, so it's hard to really pinpoint any of them, but I thought that in the second half you really saw that Dietrich Nichols belongs on this roster. He's a physical presence in the secondary. He's not a starter. I mean, don't get me wrong, he's not a guy that's gonna push anybody for playing time or anything, but he's a guy that consistently shows up when you watch the film. And when you watch him play, he plays with that edge that Steve Wilks loves. And so the question becomes, is this a guy that will end up being, you know, the Benwerke replacement after this year? And that seems like, to me, kind of an inevitability at this point, is that you're going to see Dietrich Nichols, you know, make this roster, kind of bide his time, and then next year take over that role that Benwerke has right now.
And the other guy that I talked about in the individuals, when you saw the play of Patrick Peterson and Buda Baker, obviously they really didn't need to help themselves.
No.
But I mean, they're already starters, and Patrick Peterson's already a star. Buda Baker, we believe, is on the verge of becoming a star. But to see them make plays like that, especially when the narrative with Patrick Peterson is just no one throws in his direction. But if the Cardinals are now going to allow him to play off just a little bit so he can jump routes, that's going to be fun to watch, and will make things very difficult. But in terms of the players who didn't help themselves on offense, I think T.J. Logan did the most. Chase Edmonds, we already kind of know about, we are kind of excited about, but T.J. Logan really helped himself because he kind of had become, on after the injury and with the new coaching staff, he'd become kind of a persona non grata. People forgot about him. Now, fans remembered him, but didn't seem the coaches knew what he was. And that touchdown run that he had showed the type of impact he can have. And which led both of us to believe that I thought that Logan was going to be their most impactful rookie a year ago had he not gotten hurt, because it would have been plays like that. If he's on the field for a couple of plays, he's going to bust one open for a touchdown, or he was going to have the big punt return or kick return. he's going to do kick returns. How much they actually end up returning kicks is going to be interesting to see, but it gives you optimism for the running back room and the fact that if you still have real offensive threats behind David Johnson. And I was talking to a guy for one of the things, kind of the advice that I'm kind of giving some insight for the Cardinals is, what do the Cardinals think that they have behind David Johnson? Obviously, there's a drop-off between David Johnson and Chase Edmonds. But I think what they think they have in Chase Edmonds is a player who could be, even this year, if there were no David Johnson, he could be an adequate and productive starter. TJ Logan would make a very nice backup, kind of a, if you remember the Lerod Stevens-Howling player, he's kind of a mix of Lerod Stevens-Howling and Andre Ellington, in my opinion.
Yeah, he's a good fit for this offense. He's an explosive, explosive player with the ball in his hands. He's able to do a number of things that the Cardinals just flat out need. I mean, let's be honest, they need talent on offense, as we've talked about. That's one of the things that they're kind of lacking right now. And when you look at it from that perspective, I think you hit it on the head. They're in a position to really put this team, so to speak, on their back defensively. But now all of a sudden, and we joked about it, but I don't know if we were actually joking, the best offensive players after the obvious starters may end up being like a TJ Logan, right? Like, so when you look at it from that perspective, I think you have to be excited about what you have seen thus far, and that Logan offers just a hope, because that was the thing. I mean, last year we were excited, but in the same way we were kind of nervous, like, okay, what happens if DJ, you know, gets hurt? And then DJ got hurt in the first game and it was like, oh crap. It's not only DJ, but now you don't have TJ Logan, who you and I, again, kind of agreed with that. That was the guy that could have taken that offense, not to the next level, but he was a guy that could have had, you know, maybe a mini Alvin Kamara type effect as a secondary option. And so when you look at it from that perspective, it's been, he's a really nice fit.
Players who kind of hurt themselves, in my opinion. Obviously, I think number one, you look at JJ Nelson with the more drops. I mean, it felt like he was a lock for the roster. But, and especially when you saw him in time rotation, and you had as the starting three receivers with no Larry Fitzgerald, it was Kirk, and it was Chad Williams, and it was JJ Nelson. And you're like, really? Okay. But then he does what J.J. Nelson does. I mean, and he's going to, like, the opportunities he has, he's going to make some dazzling plays. And his particular skill set really is helpful in this offense, especially if he can do, if they can get him and not just run and go routes down the field, but also use him to do a drag across the field and then get the ball. It was kind of Sam Bradford's thing in the offense that he likes to do is to allow these guys to make plays. If he can get the ball in space, he's so fast. He offers something that really no one else has. It's just flat out blazing speed, not just good speed, but well, top two or three in the entire NFL. But he just doesn't catch the ball. He can't catch things contested. He just can't do it. And I think he set himself back and I think he's in danger of missing this team now.
And I'll stick with the wide receivers. I thought Greg Little had another drop. He had some issues on special teams. I joked about it a little bit, but the last time Greg Little played special teams, that, you know, knockout shot he delivered on the, I believe, a punt return, was legal, and it's not legal anymore. Like, you can't blindside people anymore. And so, you know, let's not blame Greg Little too much. You know, it's been a long time since he's been on special teams, but in the same way, if you're the fifth wide receiver on this roster, you better be able to play special teams. And right now, I don't know if you want to keep a Greg Little over some of the other guys that are playing well.
And was there anyone else that kind of stood out to you? There was lots of players. Oh, one player that was an interesting two playing time things. One was Hassan Reddick, because he ended up playing with the second team a lot. And that was in part that played so much nickel. I'm not sure what to think of that. There was, I think Wilkes said they want to give the rotation a little different looks to see how does it look with Bynes and Buchanan nickel as opposed to Buchanan and Reddick, which is what they had early in training camp. Both Bynes and Buchanan missed a lot of time, so they gave them all the reps. But at the same time, you have to, it leaves this taste in your mouth. Like, wait, is Reddick not doing what they need him to do?
Yeah, and I think that's a question. It goes back to what we talked about at the beginning. Like, there's just not enough information yet, but it definitely makes you go, oh my gosh, not again, right? Like, not another one. I think the other thing that was kind of a struggle this week was the first team offensive line. And like I said, I don't think anybody's in danger of losing their starting position, but I go back to the Levi Brown thing. Like, is there nobody that can take Andre Smith's job? Like, is he that dominant as a run blocker, or are they that, or are the guys behind him that bad that they can't overtake him? And so it's always one of those questions you have when you see a guy struggle for basically what was most of the preseason.
So let's look at the roster battles for Thursday night. What are the roster battles to watch, and who are the players on the bubble? Steve Wilks mentioned two roster battles in particular. It's at receiver and at cornerback. And while there's at the cornerback position, it's for the depth. So who's going to be on the roster after their top three? Patrick Peterson, Jamar Taylor, and Benae Benwickery, in my opinion, are locks. Is Chris Campbell going to make this team, their sixth-round pick? Is it going to be Brandon Williams or Dietrich Nichols? Are they just going to keep four cornerbacks? Do they keep five? Then a receiver. It sounds like they might, outside of Larry Fitzgerald, they might give some of their guys some playing time, because unless they are set on Chad Williams and Christian Kirk as their number two and number three, then if Bryce Butler's still in the mix, they want to get those guys in there. I think Butler's going to play a significant amount. But then after that, if it's Williams and Kirk as number two, number three, then you have to decide, okay, who's four, who's five, who's six, and do they even keep a six? What's it going to be? We think that Trent Sherfield makes the roster, we think. But so you've got Bryce Butler, you've got Greg Little and J.J. Nelson battling for one, maybe, probably one spot. Probably one spot. But maybe two. Maybe two. So three guys battling for one or two spots. I think that's going to be interesting to see what plays out there. Are there any other positions that are going to be of intrigue to you?
I think you're going to be really intrigued by the backup interior offensive line for the Cardinals right now. I think when you look at it from that perspective, you are slightly concerned at times, but then you look at that TJ Logan run and Evan Bames, you know, down block and Daniel Munier's fantastic pull block. And so all of that was really sound. But then you watch, you know, more of the game and you're like, oh God, they're really struggling in these aspects. And so you and I talked about it off the air. Are there players that can really command a roster spot if all they can do is play guard? Or are there players that can really command a roster spot if they can only play offensive tackle? And so when you look at it this week, I think we're going to get a nice look at these battles to see, you know, what does this team have in terms of depth? Because we know the starters, like it or not, we know who the starters are. And so that's what the next question becomes, is what type of depth do they have throughout the roster?
For me, the bubble players that we're going to be looking at, there's a few players, and I'm going to have an article about it up on Wednesday morning. So it's already been published if you're listening to the show. But I think the main bubble players at different positions, at receiver, you've got J.J. Nelson and Greg Little are kind of on the bubble there. On the offensive line, I don't think there's any bubble at running back, to be honest. Maybe Elijah Penny, maybe, but I don't think there's really anyone on the bubble at running back. At tight end, I don't think there's anyone on the bubble at tight end. On the offensive line, you look at, because I think Evan Bame is going to be the backup center unless they find someone else off the waiver wire. And so you're looking at Josh Allen, Will Holden, and Corey Cunningham as your kind of three guys battling for a couple of spots. Do they, at the back end of defensive end, is it going to be Jaquise Smith? Is it going to be Cap Cappy? Are they going to float Arthur Motes, who got hurt, who's going to be out up to a month with an MCL sprain? Dennis Gardeck, these fringe undrafted players who are playing on special teams, Dennis Gardeck, Zeke Turner at safety, Dietrich Nichols, and then Brandon Williams, the interesting one, notably absent from the game. Turns out that maybe he has an ankle injury. He didn't practice today. So it's, I couldn't tell if he wasn't playing because he was out of the rotation or if he wasn't playing because he was injured. And that's an interesting piece. So do you have any other kind of bubble guys that you're watching for? I know, of course, there's one player in particular that you're kind of pounding the table for because the old guy isn't consistent enough.
Right. I mean, I'm going to continue to watch Matt McCrane. I'm interested to see what the Cardinals do with this. Do they even put Phil Dawson out there at all, or is this strictly a McCrane go show your stuff to other people game type of thing? And so that's going to be an interesting one to watch as this whole thing unfolds over the next, you know, what they're going to start making cuts on Friday.
They might get a few done on Friday, but they probably won't announce any of them until Saturday, late Saturday, because the Cardinals are always, well, wait, it's a new coaching staff. Maybe they won't be the last ones.
Right. So hope that Jess and I can hope, but yeah, so it'll be one of those things. And so we'll sit and watch that and see what happens. But you know, the roster seems like your top, 40-ish. You feel really comfortable with. It's that final 13, maybe final 10 guys where you're like, I don't know, like which way do they go? Something interesting to talk about before we get into our predictions type thing is with the injuries along the defensive interior, and they're not serious, but you've had both Robert Kimdiche, Corey Peters go down. Now Olsen Pierre's dealing with an issue. The question becomes, how healthy are they? And if they're not that healthy, holy cow, do they keep five or, God forbid, six defensive tackles to try and kind of weather the storm that will be those? Or do they roll the dice and just go with the couple guys?
Yeah, and that's the big question moving forward. So let's come back on the last segment of the Rise Up Secret podcast, Best Hour Cardinals Talk, and let's talk about our roster predictions, our final 53, our best guess at what the 53 will look like. That's coming up next on Rise Up Secret. We're back on the Rise Up Secret podcast, the Best Hour Cardinals Talk on the web, and it's time for our roster predictions. Now, I think a lot of both of us will probably have some similarities. So let's look at quarterback now. Now, is your offense and defense, are they balanced at 25-25? Because mine ended up, now, up until this most recent one, I had 26 on offense and 24 on defense until this week. and it swayed the other way. It's 26 on defense, 24 on offense. How does it look on your end?
Right now, I have 26 on offense and 24 on defense. But after our conversation today, right before the show, I probably will flip-flop that now. And because of kind of the new information we have on kind of the health of the defensive interior.
So let's talk about quarterbacks. Do you keep the three, Bradford, Rosen, and Glennon? I've got all three. I think it's pretty much, I think it would be a shock if Glennon doesn't make the team. Now, and for those of you who are listening, I published my final 50, my 53 band prediction. I'll do one more on Friday, but I published mine on Monday so that you can find that on CardsWire. But do you keep the three quarterbacks?
Yeah, I mean, I would love to keep Knopf. I just don't see it happening.
At running back, now this is where I explain it on my article, is with DJ Foster going down for the season. To me, DJ Foster was a lock for the roster. So I had all preseason five running backs. Without DJ Foster, I'm only keeping four. I'm not bringing up Elijah Penny, and I'm not keeping Sherman Beatty. DJ Foster was solid on special teams. And so what this allows me to do, I short the running backs to give another position on defense for special teams. And so I go David Johnson, Derek Coleman at fullback, Chase Edmonds, and TJ Logue. And then I think in terms of the type of roles they have, assuming they're healthy, you don't need more than that on the roster. Sherman Beatty, Darius Victor. They're just guys.
Yeah, and you don't mean it, and you know, we never mean these in like a negative way, but yeah, they're just guys. They're not going to be guys that you need to save on your roster. They're guys, if God forbid things go down, you can go get them later. I have the same foursome. I'm obviously with the DJ Foster injury, I waffled back and forth on Penny, but it comes down to, it comes down to numbers, and right now the health on the defense is more worth questioning.
At receiver, I keep only five. I was going six up until this week, and I kept waffling back and forth. So my core five, they're Larry Fitzgerald, Chad Williams, Christian Kirk, Bryce Butler, Trent Sherfield. I think Sherfield is a lock. The question for me is Bryce Butler, J.J. Nelson, and Greg Little. I think Butler has the edge with the experience that he has. He doesn't play special teams, but neither does J.J. Nelson. And so you're left. Do you keep Greg Little? And based on what we saw, we were talking the other day during the game. We were texting back and forth. We were saying, so is it a battle between Bryce Butler and Greg Little, or is it a battle between Bryce Butler and J.J. Nelson? Initially, I thought it was going to be Butler versus Little, which might give Little the edge because he actually plays special teams, even if it's not great. There's room for improvement. Bryce Butler doesn't play any special teams. But then I look at it some more, and I'm thinking, well, I think really it's between Butler and J.J. Nelson, and I think Butler has the edge. Neither one plays special teams, but Butler, he can do some of the same things that J.J. Nelson does, and he can catch the ball better. And he will offer another veteran in that room. Everything that I've gotten the vibe about is that he's well liked in the locker room. He's well respected by the coaches, and there's really the potential for more than he's been in his career. Even though he's been a decade long excuse at USC, Lane Kiffin didn't utilize him right. I don't know what the excuse was at San Diego State, Oakland. Apparently they were just clueless about talent, and Dallas, they just wanted to play their expensive receivers instead of him. So there's been excuse after excuse. There's talent there, no, undoubtedly. But do you keep five or do you keep six? And if you had the chance, do you think J.J. Nelson makes this roster? And is there any chance that Greg Little makes it?
No, I have the same five as you. So boring so far, Fitzgerald, Williams. I think Butler makes the roster because of the investment. And then Trent Sherfield, because he's – basically on every teams, he made a nice play in the game. you know, recovering that touchdown on the muff punt. So I think those are your initial five receivers. Again, you're having to cut down on what you're doing because of injuries at other positions.
For me, at tight end, I keep just three. Now, Jermaine Gresham might not be ready week one, and that could change my mind. But I think between Jermaine Gresham and Marcus Golden, I think Gresham is going to be ready. And even if he's not 100%, so he's on a snap count, I think you still can go with only just, you don't need more than three. You got Jermaine Gresham, Ricky Seals-Jones, and Gabe Holmes. And the reason why we can fudge with even those three is because throughout the preseason, we've seen John Wetzel come in as a tackle eligible, a jumbo tight end. So they don't need a fourth tight end in the position. Now, if Gresham legitimately is unable to play at all, they're going to need a fourth tight end. But I believe that Gresham will at least be able to play on a limited snap count in week one. And if that's the case, you keep three.
Yeah, and I've got the same three. I think you're going to see Gresham, Seals-Jones, and Gabe Holmes on this roster to start the season for the Arizona Cardinals.
Offensive line, how many do you keep?
I'm going to go nine. And, okay. And so my nine, I'll go first on this one. So my nine are Humphreys, Upati, Cole, Pugh, Smith, unfortunately, and then your backups are going to be Wetzel, Holden, Bame, and the rookie Corey Cunningham.
Okay. I've got obviously the starters. I think they're all locks. I go with Bame as the backup center. I got Josh Allen as their swing guard. I go John Wetzel and Corey Cunningham. I could see Will Holden over Cunningham, especially since, you know, but someone might snatch him. He was a late seventh. He was a compensatory seventh round pick who's got some athletic upside. It's not like he was super wanted to begin with. So I can see Will Holden making the squad over him. But I think Cunningham's upside is greater than Holden, I think. Holden was old over from the last coaching staff.
Right. And I would agree with your take on that. My whole thing is this. I think that they want as much flexibility as they can get. And so I think that they're looking at this group as saying, okay, what do we have in terms of Holden, Wetzel, and Bame to an extent can all play three to four positions on the offensive line. And the Cardinals, because of the defensive question marks, there could be the need for that to happen.
And the defensive side of the ball, so you move to defensive tackle. Now, my initial one, and so I have some wiggle room. I have some wiggle room for this. So the defensive tackles, I keep four. Corey Peterson, Robert Kim D. Chilson, Pierre, and Rodney Gunter. However, we don't know exactly how bad or what Olsen Pierre is injured with. So if it looks like one of those four can't be able to contribute in week one, because you're going to need four on the roster, we keep a fifth one. I think that fifth one's going to be Pasone Tassini. And that would allow. So my last two on the roster were an extra safety and an extra linebacker. And so I would bump the last linebacker, I believe, if I keep Tassini on the roster.
And I have the same top four, and I'm going to go with Pelly Anua. I thought he just showed a little more this week. There's really no great reason other than that's who I picked.
A defensive end. This is where Marcus Golden's uncertainty affects my decision. Instead of only keeping four, I keep five. Chandler Jones, Marcus Golden, Benson Mayoa, I got Ventarius Dora, and then Jaquise Smith. The Jaquise Smith was an interesting one because Arthur Motes' injury really makes things troubling. Motes is out from 2 to 4 weeks, and to me, he's the fifth defensive end on the roster. his injury does a couple things. So one, you either have to injure him, which he'll bounce back to injured reserve, and then he'll get injured settlement. You need to cut him before the season, before final cuts, because if you carry him, then you can't cut him. You have to place him on injured reserve. But then if you're going to do that, why keep him on the roster to begin with? And being a vested veteran, because he's at the back of the roster, we saw this with Philip Wheeler a year ago, you're not going to want to have him on the roster week one injured, because then that guarantees his salary for the entire year. It's a nasty truth in the NFL that you always see is these vested veterans who are at the back of the roster, they get cut right before week one and then re-signed after that. So then they're being paid on a week-to-week basis. But if they're on the roster week one as a vested veteran, their entire salary is guaranteed. And so with that, I think you have to cut Moats, because otherwise, you've already got one question mark in Golden be able to play to start the year. You can't have another player who also is hurt and can't play for the first 2, 3, 4 weeks of the year. And so I've got Jaquez Smith over Moats. And sorry, I can't keep Cappy over Jaquez Smith, because we know that Jaquez Smith has some talent there, and he's a veteran. He's done it against starters in the past, and he's apparently healthy now. And all we've seen so far is Cappy rush the court. Now he did make a couple of plays against the run. So all those Cappy fans can yell at me. I think Montarius Dora takes that spot instead of Cappy.
Yeah, I have Mayoa and Jones as your top two, obviously, and then I think it's going to be Dora and Golden, and then that's the hard part. If they keep five because of Golden's injury, I could see them keeping Cappy, but I think Dora has shown more in this preseason to warrant him being kept. So that's what I would say.
At linebacker, this is where I keep seven. This is where I keep an extra player. This was the decision of shorting running back or receiver. I keep the starters, Dalen Buchanan, Hassan Reddick, Josh Bynes, Gerald Hodges. I think he's a lock. And then I keep Scooby Wright, Edmund Robinson, and Dennis Gardeck, the undrafted rookie. Scooby Wright and Edmund Robinson, I think, are certain for the roster. Gardeck, he has been playing a lot on special teams. He's got some physicality. He's got some upside there. But he's my last man on the roster. So he gets bumped if we keep five defensive tackles. He gets bumped if I add another player or receiver. I don't keep a running back over him because I like what he's done on special teams. Scooby Wright plays all the special teams. Edmund Robinson plays all the special teams as well. So that's where I keep an extra. I keep an unbalanced, and it's not because of health. It's because of Gardeck's play on special teams.
And I've got Buchanan, Bynes, Reddick, Hodges, and then Scooby. And so this is where, you know, kind of the questions come. How many do they keep? So for me, if you keep six here and or even seven, like you said, that's a lot of linebackers. So I'm going to just, to roll with it, I'm going to go with Gardeck here, trying to kind of adjust on the fly with my addition of Anua. So I'm going to keep Gardeck here, and then I'll make a tougher decision down the roster a little bit.
At cornerback, I keep five, and the four are the top three we know, Peterson, Taylor, Benwickery. I keep the sixth round pick, Chris Campbell. And where I go is, instead of Brandon Williams, I go Dietrich Nichols. They both offer special teams, but Nichols has the better upside at the position. I think, you know, Williams has had his chance. I think we've seen him, you know, top out, and he hasn't been anything special. And Nichols has upside as a cornerback in addition to what he can do in special teams.
Yeah, I'm with you 100%. I don't think Williams makes this roster. For me, I would say that this, I would say you're five. I mean, you got Peterson and Jamar Taylor. You got Ben Werke and Campbell and then Dietrich Nichols. And so then that takes us to safety, where, you know, this is where the talent lies in this roster. And we talked about this a little bit, how difficult these picks were going to be coming over. And so for me, that means I have so far, let me double check my count here, 9 and 15 and 20. So I have room for 6 thus far. And so, oh no, I added wrong on one. So I have room for 5. Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay. So I think, you know, when you look at it, you know, it's going to be Antoine Bethea and Budenholzer is your quote unquote starters. And I use that term extremely loosely because Trey Boston's probably going to play, what would you say, 75, 80% of the snaps?
Very possibly.
And so with that, the question becomes, who do you keep? Well, I think Rudy Ford's going to make this roster. He is, he was a big part of that muffed punt early in the game where he was really able to force the return man to try to make a move and a decision. And it ended extremely poorly for him.
And for me, I keep those same 4, but this is where the shorted running back, the shorted receiver room, it allows me to keep Zeke Taylor, the safety out of Washington. Been playing all the special teams, was not a standout safety in college, but it was a standout special teams player. I look at the playing time he's been getting with the starters on special teams, and I'm thinking he's a core special teamer, so I think they're going to try and find a way to put him on the roster. And so it came down to, would I rather have Greg Little on the roster or Zeke Turner? I said Zeke Turner. Would I rather see Sherman Beatty on the roster or Elijah Penny or Dennis Gardeck? And each of those times, based on what I've seen in special teams rotations, even with the starters, those two are going to have the priority. So I keep Zeke Turner, but like Gardeck. So Turner is my number 52 on the roster, and Gardeck's my number 53. Those are the first two guys to get bumped if we have to keep another player at another position because of injury. So there's the wiggle room there. Basically, I said Dietrich Nichols over Brandon Williams, and then after that, everything else was a decision based on position, and then I decided to keep Turner and Gardeck over the back end of the over Greg Little or J.J. Nelson or Sherman Beatty or Eli Penny. And I went with the predictable specialists. So you've got Andy Lee, you've got Aaron Brewer, and I kept Phil Dawson. I kept Phil Dawson because I don't get the vibe from the team that Matt McCrane is making a serious push for the job. I see that competition they keep talking about much in the same way as we heard the word competition with Blaine Gabbert versus Drew Stanton. There was never a real chance for him to beat it out. Or this year, Josh Rosen beating out Sam Bradford. I mean, there was the thought, but never any real chance. Even with a couple of missed field goals by Phil Dawson, I still don't think that the team's going to turn to the undrafted rookie over the 43-year-old who's one of the best clutch kickers in history, even with the inconsistency he had last year.
Yeah, and I think so Turner and then A.J. Howard both make it for me as well, sorry. And then I think they're going to, be gutless and keep Phil Dawson as well.
All right. So that'll wrap up this show. Obviously, we will know what the first final 53 will look at by the time we have our next show. There'll probably be some roster additions. We'll know what the practice squad looks like initially. But our next show in a week will be our season preview. We'll make some predictions and stuff like that. We'll kind of react to final cuts. And that'll wrap up this edition of the Rise of Sea Red podcast, episode 199, the best hour Cardinals talk on the web. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. Thanks for listening to this show, and go Cardinals.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise Up Red Sea, Be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.